I'd like to welcome everybody here to the PCAOB Roundtable on Auditor Communications with Audit Committees. I'm Marty Bauman, the PCAOB Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards. I'd also like to welcome those who are listening in on our webcast. Like our SAG meetings, this meeting is webcast, and so thank all of those folks for joining us as well. On March 29th, the board proposed a new auditing standard regarding auditor communications with audit committees, and the comment period closed on May 28th. As part of those comments, we received many good comment letters and valuable input, but an important theme that recurred through many of the letters was the fact that the board should consider conducting additional outreach, especially to members of audit committees, to gain insights in terms of how they saw the audit committee and auditor communication process working, and getting more views from audit committee members regarding the communications process. Today's roundtable represents the board's response to those commenters and also the ability to get further input on some additional questions and comments that were raised during the comment letter process. So as part of this roundtable process, we've prepared a briefing paper, which you've all seen, and additionally, the comment period has been reopened and extended through October 21st, 2010. Today we'll discuss a number of topics relating to communications with audit committees, auditor communications with audit committees, including which communications are useful to audit committees in their oversight of the audit, communications relating to accounting policies, practices, and estimates, two-way communications between the auditor and audit committees. One of the new features of the proposed standard was a requirement for the auditor to evaluate the effectiveness of the two-way communications, and we received quite a few comments in that area as well. Another important topic would be whether auditor communications should be written or oral. There are a lot of differing views on that aspect also. And then several other topics will be discussed along the way. I want to extend my personal appreciation for the willingness of all of you to be here today. I know you all have very busy schedules. Summer is just shortly over, and here you are in Washington discussing an important topic with us. It is very valuable to us in this standard-setting process, so I want to express how much we appreciate the fact that you all took the time to come today. Everybody, please be engaged today. We really are looking for all of your input, so I know I don't have to say that in most cases for most folks, but I thought I'd say that anyway. This is a very, very important topic, communications, auditor communications with the audit committee. It's our view that, or my view at least, that it's one of the very, very important features in terms of ensuring that the audit process is working effectively. And I think Sarbanes-Oxley legislation saw it that way and changed the relationship between the auditor and management and auditor to the audit committee. The level and quality of those communications are key to an effective audit process. Finally, I have a couple of administrative items. You should have a folder in front of you today that has all of the materials you'll need. It has a copy of the proposed standard, the briefing paper, seating chart, I think copies of the slides we'll be putting up, as well as the agenda. We'll be taking a break around 10:15. Lunch will be at noon, right outside the doors here. And we should finish the day around 3 p.m., unless the conversations get really exciting, in which case it could go on very late. Before I turn the floor over to our acting chairman, Dan Gelzer, I'd like to go around the room and ask everybody to briefly introduce themselves, and as well as your organizational affiliation, including if you are on audit, representative of audit committees, to tell us about that as well. So, as again, I'm Marty Bauman, and I'll turn to my left.
I'm Jennifer Rand. I'm Deputy Director of Professional Standards and also Deputy Chief Auditor for PCAOB.
And Jessica Watson, I'm an Associate Chief Auditor with the PCAOB.
I'm Jeb Burns. I'm the Chief Investment Officer with the Municipal Employees Retirement System of Michigan.
I'm Lisa Gaynor. I'm an assistant professor at University of South Florida, and I served as a member of a research team on audit committee communications.
Hi, I'm Bob Kippers with Deloitte. I'm deputy CEO. My responsibilities are principally regulatory and public policy.
I'm Alex Mandel. I'm on five boards. I'm involved with three audit committees, and I chair one of those. So this topic is very great interest to me. Thanks.
Steve Harris, PCAOB board member.
Hal Schroeder, Carlson Capital, a portfolio manager, and until recently a audit committee member and of a Lloyd's syndicate.
Kiko Harvey, I'm the vice president of corporate audit and enterprise risk management at Delta Airlines, and I report to the audit committee.
I'm Mike Cook. I've been a member of a variety of audit committees and chaired a few over the years. Currently the chairman of the audit committee of Comcast.
Dan Gelzer, PCAOB board member.
I'm Linda Griggs. I'm a lawyer with Morgan, Lewis & Bacchus here in Washington, and my practice consists of advising on securities regulatory matters, including financial reporting matters and corporate governance. I have served on the audit committee of a public company.
Bob Doerr, National Director of Assurance Services for McGladrey & Poland.
Gary Kaber, Chief Accounting Officer of Xerox Corporation. I've never been on an audit committee, but I'm the process owner for our audit committee's meeting process.
Joanne Wegener, I'm the Quality Assurance Partner for Blackman Kallig, a Chicago-based public accounting firm.
Brian Croteau, Deputy Chief Accountant at the Securities and Exchange Commission. And if I could just briefly say that while anything that I would, any views I would express today would be my own, I certainly speak on behalf of many at the SEC in commending the PCAOB for holding this roundtable today and for all of the participants in taking the time to attend. We really appreciate it as well.
Arnie Hanisch, Vice President and Chief Accounting Officer at Eli Lilly & Company. I've been involved in interfacing with the Audit Committee for well over 20 years.
Karen Hasty Williams. For my day job, I am a partner at the law firm of Carl & Warney here in Washington, but I serve on five corporate boards and chair three audit committees, so I felt this was an important meeting for me to attend. Thank you.
Jim Cox, and my day job is a professor at Duke Law School, and I serve and have served on audit committees.
Lynn Turner, I currently serve on the Board of Trustees of the Colorado Public Retirement System, a $38 billion investment fund. I also serve as a senior advisor to a forensic and economic consulting firm, LECG. I've served on a number of audit committees and chaired three of them. And in a prior life, also as a signing audit partner.
Charlie Niemeyer, PCAOB board member.
I'm Denny Beresford. I'm a professor at the University of Georgia. I am now the chairman of the audit committee of three large corporations. And I served 26 years in public accounting with 10 years in between as a standard setter at the FASB.
Sam Ranzilla, I'm the National Managing Partner for Audit Quality and Professional Practice at KPMG.
I'm Mary Hartman Morris. I'm an investment officer at CalPERS, the California Public Employees Retirement System.
I'm Bill Gradison, a member of the PCAOB board. I formerly served on the audit committee of a public company in the healthcare field.
Good morning. My name is Roger Coffin. I'm the Associate Director of the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance and an Associate Professor of the Practice at the University of Delaware.
Larry Salva, Senior Vice President, Chief Accounting Officer of Comcast. Been at Comcast the last 10 years. Prior to that, spent 23 years with Coopers & Lybrand and PricewaterhouseCoopers, including as a signing partner. And as also as a national accounting consulting and risk management partner.
Good morning, George Munoz. I'm an attorney and CPA. I'm the audit chair of Altria and the audit chair of the National Geographic.
Hasnat Ahmed, Assistant Chief Auditor, PCAOB.
Barbara Banich, Associate Chief Auditor, PCAOB.
Well, thank you, everybody, for taking the time to do that. And clearly, we're fortunate to get a group of very qualified people to talk about a very important subject with us today. So with that, I'd like to ask Dan Gelzer to introduce the program. Dan?
Thank you very much, Marty, and good morning to everyone. I'd also like to welcome everyone to the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board's roundtable on auditor communications with audit committees. Like Marty, I want to begin by thanking all of the panelists for joining us today and providing us with the benefit of your insights and experience. The board appreciates your willingness to devote time, effort, and thought to helping us address this important topic. This roundtable is a key component of the board's ongoing standard-setting process. I've spoken in the past about the importance of openness and transparency in board standard-setting. Over the last 2 years, we've experimented with the use of concept releases, with multiple public comment periods on proposed standards, and with more focused discussion with our standing advisory group of standard-setting projects. I view roundtables like this one as another tool that we can use to make sure that the board receives the most thoughtful and relevant input available when it writes standards, and that investors, preparers, and auditors all have the chance to contribute to our decision making. The board's proposal to enhance auditor audit committee communication was published last March. The objective of that proposal was to bring the standards related to auditor communication with audit committees into line with the role that the Sarbanes-Oxley Act assigns to the committee in overseeing the relationship between a public company and its auditor. The provisions of the Act that deal with audit committees are predicated on the idea that independent, informed, and proactive audit committees are central to protecting the interests of investors in reliable and informative financial disclosure. That vision can only be fully realized if there's a robust dialogue between the auditor and the committee. The proposed standard aimed to accomplish that by expanding and clarifying the rules of the road that govern auditor audit committee communications. The board received 34 comments on the proposal, including letters from several of the participants that are around the table here with us this morning. The primary purpose of the roundtable is to explore in more depth some of the issues that were raised in those comments. One theme that ran through many of the submissions was that before proceeding further with a new standard, the board needed to engage in additional outreach, particularly to directors and others with firsthand experience in the work of audit committees. Along those lines, some commenters suggested that the March proposal approached the subject too much from the perspective of what auditors thought directors should receive and without enough sensitivity to what information is actually beneficial to audit committees. Others warned against creating requirements that would turn the communications process into a sterile check-the-box exercise. One goal of this roundtable is to address those concerns and to make sure that the board understands the dynamics of successful auditor audit committee communication. The comments also reminded us that the auditor and the audit committee have a common interest in the reliability of the company's financial reporting. That's why the proposal emphasized two-way communication between the auditor and the committee. If the auditor views meeting the requirements that govern its relationship with the audit committee as just another regulatory hoop that it must jump through, it may deprive itself of an important source of information and insight. The result could be to undermine the effectiveness of the auditor's work. Conversely, if the audit committee treats the audit as just another compliance cost and one that needs to be minimized as much as possible, the committee may deprive itself of a valuable tool to assist in assuring the integrity of the company's financial reporting. Accordingly, it's vital that any standards the board adopts in this area promote a dialogue between the auditor and the audit committee that benefits both parties. I'm certainly looking forward to hearing your thoughts on how we can best accomplish that. Thanks again to the panelists for taking the time to be here with us today, and I'll turn the proceedings Back to you, Marty, to introduce the first topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. The first topic, and we are going to pretty much, we will follow the order of the briefing paper that you all have. Our first topic is communications that are useful to the committee's oversight of the audit. And let me ask Board Member Charlie Niemeyer to say a few words to introduce this topic.
Thank you, Marty. The role of audit committees in corporate governance came into prominence in the 1970s under the directions of Rod Hills as chairman of the SEC. At that time, as a part of a comprehensive strategy to address revelations of bribery of foreign officials and other corrupt practices by American public companies, the SEC directed the New York Stock Exchange to require all public companies to create, all listed companies to create independent audit committees to oversee the preparation of accurate corporate financial reports. In 2002, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act added to the audit committee's responsibilities to address perceived problems with management's hold on and control over auditors. Thus, the Act required stock exchanges to require audit committees to be responsible for the appointment, compensation, and oversight of auditors, including the resolution of disagreements between management and the auditor regarding financial reporting. We are here today to talk about the PCAOB's proposal to update the existing audit standard requiring the auditor to communicate certain information to the audit committee. That standard predated the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, so it's not difficult to envision why an update would be appropriate. The purpose of this meeting is to solicit views based on practical experience of our participants about what sort of updates we should undertake. The purpose is also to get a reaction to the draft standard the PCAOB proposed in March, which in addition to updating the existing standard, uses new language that require new communications from auditors, both on audit issues and on significant accounting matters beyond those required in AU Section 380, which was written long before the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Underlying the Sarbanes-Oxley reforms in this area is the idea that audit committees are expected to be independent of management and, when needed, step in and champion the auditor. That said, based on PCAOB inspections and other oversight, I'm concerned that there's still a lot of situations where the auditor does not stand up to the client. Therefore, from my perspective, the point of the proposal, whether it takes the form of what the PCAOB proposed in March or takes some other direction, is to give the audit committee adequate information about what's going on in the audit, to allow the audit committee to know when to step in and what is needed to do to defend the audit. Several commenters on the proposal expressed concern that it would burden audit committees with too much information, which would increase review time and possibly obscure important issues in the audit. We're seeking feedback from the roundtable to understand what communication should be made to audit committees to aid in effective oversight of the audit. Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, Charlie. The discussion questions we'd like to ask you to consider as part of this first topic are up on the screen and in your slides. And the first one is, what matters related to the audit are most important to audit committee members in their oversight of the audit? Which of these matters should be required to be communicated by the auditor to the audit committee? Second question is, what matters do investors believe audit committees need to know for effective oversight of the audit? Which of these matters should be required to be communicated by the auditor to the audit committee? We've asked a couple of members of the roundtable to kick off this discussion with a couple of brief comments. Please, during the session, anybody else who wants to make comments, please just turn your tent card on its side, on its edge, and we'll call on you during the discussion topic. The first one we've asked to provide some comments on this subject is Denny Beresford.
I'd like to add my thanks to the PCAOB for allowing this opportunity for more input on this project. Among other things, I'd like to observe that there are more audit committee members participating in this roundtable than submitted comments on the proposal. So we've doubled the input simply by showing up here today. I think that's terrific.
As Marty said, I was asked to introduce this topic from an audit committee member's perspective, and I'd like to put things in perspective. Audit committee members consider independent auditors to be a very important resource, obviously, a critically important resource, but not necessarily the most important one in terms of sort of the total package. We spend most of our time both at committee meetings and otherwise with financial management of our companies, what I would call kind of the first line of defense, and of course we have several here today, corporate controllers and CFOs and so forth. These are the individuals that we must rely completely on to maintain the accurate accounting records and controls of the corporations. They must also be candid and complete in all of their communications with us. In short, they must be absolutely qualified and trustworthy, or we should act quickly to see that they are replaced. That would be one of our principal responsibilities as audit committee members. Of course, for most companies, we have a second line of defense in the internal audit function, like KICO. This group reports to the audit committee and can help serve as our eyes and ears with respect to many of the specifics of the company's accounting. The external auditors are also extremely important, but from my perspective, they are what I would call our third line of defense. As I like to put it when speaking to an auditing group, if there were an Oscar for auditors, it would be for best supporting actor rather than lead actor. Now, none of that is intended to denigrate the external audit function in any way at all. We need company management, audit committees, internal auditors, and external auditors to work together in a very cooperative way to best protect shareholders and the public. But these comments do influence the perspectives in my earlier letter on the proposal that I'll refer briefly to now. As noted in the summary document for today's meeting, I'm concerned that the expanded requirements for auditor communications could easily lead to a checklist approach whereby routine matters tend to drive out more substantive issues. We actually have a fair amount of that today as present, as auditors already have to present a list of their requirements each quarter or other periods. Part of the duties of an audit committee chair would be to caution the engagement partner to omit reading them at an audit committee meeting when nothing truly important has happened. Otherwise, there may be a tendency for them to drone on with useless words when audit committee members have many other things that they want to learn. We actually have to tell them to tell us what is actually new or different or unusual from period to period. Otherwise, we just get a bunch of boilerplate. So what do we really want to know? There are several others with equal or more experience than mine at today's meeting. We have five or six members of audit committees here today, currently, or others that have had them in the past. So let me start with just a few, and frankly, that's my emphasis, is that we should end up in this document with just a few basic requirements. As noted in my letter, I want to hear an assessment of the tone at the top of the organization, both the financial management and the overall company. And I'm not necessarily suggesting that that should be a requirement in the final standard, but that's one of the most important things that the audit committee wants to know. And also an assessment of the quality of financial management from time to time, including internal audit. Again, not necessarily a stated requirement, but something that's critically important to the audit committee members. Other things I'd like to hear about, and these are things that I think should be the subject of specific requirements. I'd like to hear a summary of the audit plan, and particularly any unusual procedures, things that are going to be the particular topics of emphasis during the year, or things that have changed from year to year. Any sensitive matters that the audit engagement partner is aware of that financial management is not bringing to the audit committee's attention that should be, and that's obviously a matter of significant judgment. And important accounting or auditing issues that have been discussed with the accounting firm's national office because they are close calls. I could probably provide a few more topics, but I'd like to let other audit committee members add their ideas during this discussion. Also, as I said, my preference would be to not have a lengthy checklist, but rather leave it to the judgment of the audit partner. And of course, I also leave it to the judgment of the audit committee members to ask the questions that they think are most important, both the judgment of the audit committee chairman, who should have a very good working relationship with the audit engagement partner, but also the other members of the committee who ask questions at the meetings. I feel that they are more likely to do that if they are not put off by what might become an overly long and boilerplate-ish type report by the external auditors pursuant to the current draft. Again, Marty, thanks very much for the opportunity to lead off this issue, and I look forward to participating throughout the day.
Thanks, Danny, very much for those comments with respect to the first two questions that we posed. Lynn Turner, we'd like to hear from you on these questions.
Thank you, Marty. And I do commend the staff for their efforts to date. This is obviously an important project from an investor perspective. High-quality audits is what really does give us confidence in the numbers, understand that management puts them together, but it is that independent set of eyes and the process that goes with it that establishes the credibility and reliability of those numbers to us as investors, and that information is extremely important as we decide where to allocate our capital, both here in the U.S. and abroad in the various markets. The audit committee plays an extremely important part in that overall role. They have an important role as overseers and monitors of the process. And if the audit committees are going to get their jobs done in a fashion, in a diligent fashion, that means that the audit committees have got to get the type of information that they need to make sure that, in fact, the audit's getting done in a high-quality fashion. As I read through your proposal, Marty, I find that, for the most part, I think the staff have done an excellent job. I think the topics that they tee up are relevant. They're certainly, as I went through them, I couldn't find one of those topics that an audit committee, in my opinion, wouldn't want to know if they were actually overseeing and monitoring the project. In fact, I have to ask myself, how could it be that someone wouldn't want to know that information, regardless of where you got it in a list or not? So I find it a very good starting point. I think the two-way communication, the assessment of that two-way communication, is an important factor. Where I've sat on audit committees, I've asked auditors to give us that type of feedback, so I do think it's good. And in fact, as I look through the various topics, again, my experience has been we've gone through all those in the various audit committees I've sat on, and it's never really been a problem. It's never, if we do our job right, it's never turned into a checklist. There is that dialogue back and forth. And if you got a good audit partner, you got good audit committee people, you just don't see it turn into a boilerplate checklist, which I agree with Danny on. That's the last thing we want to have happen here. But my experience has been those type items don't turn into that. I think Danny mentioned a couple things that are very good as far as things that you as an audit committee would want to know: the assessment of the tone at the top and the quality of the financial reporting team. That's always helpful. But there were two things that were really, in my mind, missing. And one's not so much missing, but how it's prioritized. But the first thing is, I definitely, as an audit committee member, want to know what the staffing is on the audit engagement. You can put down any firm's name on that audit report, but the audit's only as good as the partner, manager, and in charge. And ultimately, as an audit committee member, I want to know who's on the job, their experience, and then I also want to know who's doing the heavy lifting on the difficult, risky areas. It's one thing if it's being done by a partner with many years of experience. It's another thing if it's being done by someone that just doesn't have that experience. So I'm always interested and I've always got a schedule, quite frankly, from our auditors about who's doing what on the audit. The second issue is the issue of risk. And in the proposal, you mentioned back in one of the appendix, I forget which one, it might be C or whatever, that when the auditors have a conversation with the audit committee about the scope of the audit, one of the components of that discussion should be something about risk. But you really don't see that in the proposal or in the standard until you get all the way back to the appendix. And it seems to me, especially in light of what we've been going through the last few years in this country and the focus on risk, that the priority given to a discussion between the audit committee and the auditor with respect to the risk is very important. Auditors are already required to identify the risks, and typically where I've sat on the audit committee, we've asked for the auditor to tee up to us, as well as the CFO, independently, the top five risks in the business, and then how they're going to go about auditing those top five risks and whether it's consistent with what financial management is telling us. And so I think the fact that we don't find much until we get to an appendix about the discussion of risk and the role it plays in the scoping of the audit, that I'd elevate that up to more in the body of the document. I would note that, you know, it's been a long time since we've had the Blue Ribbon report on audit committees that started a lot of this off. As we did that report, we heard many of the same concerns at the time about, oh, it'd become boilerplate, it'd become a list, it would cool, not broaden the discussion between the auditors and audit committees. And quite frankly, it just hasn't, despite all those concerns, it hasn't occurred. In fact, I think most people around the table would say the audit committees today versus where they were in 1998 is the difference between black and white. They've come much further and they're doing a much better job today. So again, I commend you for where you go. I think the proposal's very good. I'd make some refinements to it, but I think it's about right.
Next is Mary Hartman Morris.
Thank you, Marty. I mentioned I'm an investment officer for the California Public Employees Retirement System, but in prior life I was an accountant and an auditor, and I'm here to, as a representative of CalPERS. I want to spend a little bit of time. CalPERS, of course, as you know, is the nation's largest public pension fund, overseeing $210 billion in assets. This capital is allocated over 9,000 companies worldwide. I think it's important for me to mention that because, as an investor, I think we try to bring a perspective that's important to our beneficiaries. We appreciate the opportunity to attend this roundtable and offer our perspective on these important issues. Of course, we look forward to hearing our perspective of other members of the audit committee, audit community, and engaging in mutually beneficial dialogue. Given CalPERS' substantial global equity holdings, we have a vested interest in maintaining the integrity and efficiency of the capital markets. As Lynn mentioned, the financial interests of CalPERS beneficiaries are most effectively served in an environment where investors can confidently utilize financial statements to evaluate investments. We believe robust communication between the auditor and the audit committee helps promote this confidence by ensuring the audit committee has the information it needs to serve as an effective monitor. We view the audit committee as a direct link or as a fiduciary to represent all of us as share owners and capital providers. In our comment letter to the PCAOB, we offered support, and we thought that the communications requirement was a good thing and very beneficial to us. And we commend the PCAOB for proposing this regulation, and we believe that a rule proposal will help set the baseline, although, you know, this communication is ongoing, but we believe it to support and establish a standard. To begin, it may be beneficial to you to outline the view of what we believe as the role of both the auditor and the audit committee as an investor. I spend part of my time engaging companies in our portfolios and talking to some audit committee members, a few of who I've met during those engagement participations. We believe that the auditor's role is decreasing the risk of material misstatements in financial reports, you know, along with a lot of other things. But we do believe that audit committee's role is protecting investors' interests and overseeing the integrity of the company's financial reporting. From an investor's perspective, not only is it important that audit committees play the important oversight role to ensure the integrity of financial reporting, but we are very interested in ensuring the auditor provides audit committees with information deemed material to the market valuation of the company's securities. So bottom line for us as an investor, what is the value of our investment and the value it provides to our beneficiaries? With this in mind, we approach the issues of communications beneficial to audit committees by first looking at the information investors find important. And I think many of you have already mentioned that. We then derive what we believe the audit committee's information requirements should be. There's lots of different examples, lots of different studies, and I think many of you here will be speaking to that. But I think that we used one thing in our discussion was the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England, Wales, Financial Services, ICAW. They entitled a report, Audit of Banks, Lessons from the Crisis. This report addresses the role of auditors in providing information to investors. And this report specifically addresses banks, but we believe, of course, this is beneficial for all institutions. Key to this, I think, in the crisis is one of the things we want to ask is, you know, where were the auditors and where was the audit committee during the crisis? And I think there is some issues outlined there that says there might be some evidence that there needs to be better communication. First, the auditor's opinion of key business and audit risk. We think we'd like to see that. Second, the auditor's opinion of key assumptions used in materially important judgments that affect the financial statements. The auditor should state whether these assumptions are aggressive, conservative, or reasonable. Third, the key audit issues and their resolutions. Fourth, significant changes to accounting policies. Fifth, unusual transactions. And sixth, accounting applications and practices that are unique to the industry. And, you know, this is already key things, but I think it's important to summarize this because from an investor's perspective, we want to understand that and be able to, the auditor and the audit committee, be able to articulate that well to investors. As representatives of investors, audit committee members must have access to all of this information. Furthermore, the information must be detailed enough that a committee can effectively evaluate the merits of a company's financial reporting process. While we believe the explicit role, reporting requirement benefit of auditor and audit committee communication, we also acknowledge the individualized nature of each audit. So we do agree that it should not be a check the box. I think even Lynn and Denny mentioned the importance of making sure that that dialogue is consistent with not a check the box process. That's why we believe it's critical that auditors use sound judgment and avoid the check the box approach to communication. Rather, it's our hope that these regulations serve as a foundation for building even stronger dialogue between these two parties. We believe an audit standard will ensure a baseline to foster and facilitate robust, meaningful discussion between the auditors and the audit committees. We reiterate the importance of organic discussions between the auditor and the audit committee and would not recommend this dialogue be scripted. And today, of course, we look forward to hearing from audit committee members, auditors, institutional investors, other institutional investors, and others on these topics. So thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Mary. While others in the room are putting their 10 cards up, and please do that, and we'll call on you, so please get your cards up. I would just like to let one of our members of the roundtable introduce himself. We went around the table earlier, Don, and everybody said who they were and their affiliations and audit committee experience, and we'd love to hear from you.
Well, good morning. Thank you very much. Don Nicolaiason, former chief accountant at the SEC. I'm chair of the audit committee at three companies, Verizon, Morgan Stanley, and Zurich Financial Services. So delighted to be here. Appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to a very interesting discussion.
Thank you, and we look forward to having your 10 card up throughout the meeting. I think the first card up was Mike Cook.
Thank you, Marty. Brief comments on this topic, agreeing largely with what Denny said, what Lynn said about the audit committee role. I would like to make an overall observation, though, about this. As I was reading into the materials, I got encouraged at one point because we started talking about financial reporting, and then my encouragement disappeared because we drifted back into talking only about the audit.
And I understand the role and authority of the PCAOB, and maybe that's why that has to be, but as you look at what's useful to the audit, what's relevant to the audit, what relates to the audit, and so on and so on, it is only a part of the financial reporting process that the audit committee has a great deal of responsibility for, more so on the audit side perhaps than other financial communications. But I think there's some evidence, at least in my opinion, that the audit as part of the total financial reporting package is declining in usefulness, or certainly not gaining in usefulness compared to other forms of communication, including earnings releases and quarterly information and business performance information, non-GAAP financial information, all of which I think audit committees need to be substantially engaged with, and our auditors of our audited financial statements also need to be engaged with, and a dialogue about those topics is often very important. I, for that reason, would be inclined to not favor much in the way of expansion of what we have today about communications related to the audit, because I think they are quite sufficient. In some cases, maybe a little more than they need to be. In some cases, they could be enhanced. But for the most part, they're adequate. And I, for one, thinking about audit committees' responsibilities and not having unlimited amount of time for these matters, would not like to take a lot more time away from other areas of financial reporting, which are, in my opinion, of emerging importance and perhaps greater importance, to spend on the details of the audit, which are already sufficiently covered, I think, in the existing requirements. The only other point I'd make, perhaps, at this stage is I think the whole issue of quality of auditing and quality of financial reporting is driven by people, and I would be very much inclined to be sure that the audit committee spends its time with people, meaning the audit team, and I endorse what Lynn Turner said about who are the people, how experienced are they, what particular skills do they bring that enables them to fulfill those responsibilities effectively, and endorse what Denny was suggesting, which I think is critical. I think some of the most important communications that I receive as an audit committee member from the auditing firm are people-related and are not covered by the types of things that are easy to put in a pronouncement such as this, but tone at the top is number one on the list. If you said you can only talk to the auditors about one subject in the course of a year, what would it be? For me, it would be tone at the top. And that is not covered here because it's very hard to turn it into a requirement. But if we had a focus here on best practices and a focus on effective communication, not requirements, I think we'd get a better end product, and tone at the top would be there. The quality of the financial staff, the depth of the financial staff, particularly important as we've been through downsizing, cutting back resources in a lot of areas, the quality of the internal audit function, substantive quality of the internal audit function. How good is it and how reliable is it for the audit committee and for the financial reporting process? So I would like to shift some of the discussion to maybe best practices, maybe people-oriented, harder to capture in requirements, but it concerns me greatly that we're going to stack up more and more and more required communications which are of less and less and less value to me as a member of an audit committee, and less where I want to spend my time talking with management and the auditors. And I won't give the three-legged stool speech in great depth, but I don't view anything as two-way. I view this as a three-way process between the audit committee, the management, and the auditors, internal and external, and each having a roughly equal place at the table, one being too long or too short, the stool likely to tumble over, anyone left out of the process, and it's not an effective process. The great emphasis here on two-way communication is not the way I would go. Thanks, Mike. If I could interject with a question, because both you and Denny brought it up, but I think Denny also said that he wouldn't make it as a requirement. I think I heard both of you say the most important thing you could hear, if there were one thing to hear from the auditors was about the tone at the top and the quality of management. But yet, I think you both said that isn't something I put into the standard as a requirement for communication. So if that's the most important thing you'd want to hear, you're saying we don't need to put it in there because you're going to ask it anyway as audit committee members? Is that the point? Maybe Denny or Mike?
I'll take a shot, and Denny can correct me. My concern about it is, like anything else, if you make it a required communication, you have to define it in great depth. You have to lawyerize it before it takes place. You have to document it, and all of those things will stifle the communication. And if we could have this in an environment where not everything had to be defined in great precision and written down and so on and so on, I think we would enhance the effectiveness of the communication process. That is my reservation, Marty, is I'd rather list it as a best practice and have a good dialogue than make it a requirement and kill it. And I think we have ample opportunity to kill it just by trying to argue about what tone at the top really means. But I know what it means. And the lead audit partner, when I ask about it, knows what it means. And we have a very effective dialogue. If I thought that that same dialogue was taking place after having been cleared by six people and prepared for in advance and so on, it would be far less effective for me. That's why I'm concerned about the requirement. But I think it's absolutely essential. I mean, this notion that audit committees can, notwithstanding their very best efforts and time that they put in, you breeze through, you know, 6, 12, 15 days a year, you know everybody's on their best behavior, all the desks are clean, all the things are what you expect them to be. What I want to know is what they're like when really tough decisions need to get made and people need to show what their real standards and principles are. And more often than not, the auditors like you to be part of those discussions, and that's what I want to hear about. I'm afraid of institutionalizing that and killing it.
Thanks for expanding on that. Oh, Denny?
My comments would be similar. I just don't want to take the time to build an infrastructure to determine what tone at the top or quality of financial management means. I'd prefer to work that out on a one-to-one basis based on my judgment and my discussions with management. I'd also, while I'm generally, I shouldn't say general, I'm strongly in favor of written communications as a requirement for all the other things in the document. I can't see this as something that would be subject to written communications at all. And I just think it's far more effective to let this be a best practice without any particular framework. Just let it be something that you elect people, you appoint people to be audit committee chairman based in large part on their experience, their judgment, and I think it's something that you should allow them to use that judgment.
Thanks. Hal, did you want to comment on that point?
I just want to ask a question of both of them. Do you think that the quality of the audit committees is up to what you're suggesting? And I ask that because both of you all are extremely experienced. You've been around a long time. You understand the issues, but not every audit committee member comes with the same background that you two gentlemen have.